Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to be back, and it's great to have you back. This week, I'm joined by Ivy Bromius from CircleThrice.com. Ivy is a project manager, a magical timing expert, a tarot reader, and a witch. Ivy, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Do you want to start off by maybe giving a brief, maybe plugging your stuff a little bit so that we get it right here at the beginning of the episode?
Yeah, we get all that stuff out of the way. Yeah.
And then also people, you know, tend to like not listen to the very end. So, you know.
Oh, right. They get tired and they're like, that's enough of these people. Yeah, I've been there. That's a weird list, right? That's a weird list of the skills, right? You're like, and how do these fit together? So yes, my whole site is dedicated to the idea that you can absolutely steal the tools and techniques of project management from like the corporate overlords, mix them with magic and forecasting, and use them to like build your best life, build the better world we know is possible, and get shit done, right? So it's kind of a mix of these very mundane seeming things, right? Like about setting good goals and planning, but then combining and integrating magic. And so that's what I do personally. And that's what I teach in my, you know, courses and books and things that I do on my site.
Awesome. And what offerings do you have coming up? I know you said you had some stuff in the works coming out soon here.
Yeah. So I have a new course starting on the summer solstice. It's called Cycle Mapping. And it's a framework for getting shit done, basically. So more of your tasks to get you to your goals, but also more of the magic that you want to do, incorporating and integrating and having a regular system that has kind of enchantment built in. And it's called cycle mapping because it's based on a cyclical process, right? Not this linear grind achievement model, but a cycle, a model where you're cycling through, you're revisiting what you're doing, you're seeing if it works for you. It's based on agile methodologies, which will sound super familiar to like some of the computer geeks that might be listening, but it's more based on how to make that process enchanted and enchantable. So
do you want to tell me a little bit more about agile methodologies? That sounds kind of interesting. What is the deal there?
So once upon a time, in the 70s, there were some geeks. And I say that with love because I'm one of them, right? Some computer professionals before my time who were having a hard time figuring out how to make effective software. So like the whole world runs on computers now. This was at the start of this. And what they realized is that people were asking them to build something like, please go make me computer software. And they'd go away for like a year and work and come back. And then the people that asked them to do this would be like, yeah, that's not what we wanted. Or, you know, things have changed. And as our technology started to grow faster and faster, and our world in general started to get more and more chaotic and move faster and faster, they realized that this just didn't work. And the truth is that they were coming at it from like, let's make some software, but it's true for so much else. I mean, I think we've all been in the situation where we're like, I'm going to do a thing. I'm going to dedicate myself to this thing. And then you go heads down and you work on it and you take all these months to do it. And then you realize, oh, it was the wrong thing, or it's not working. It wasn't working this whole time. And you never adjust course. You're not being agile. So these geeks, they hold up in this, I think it was in Colorado somewhere, like in Vail, like, a, you know, they had a little thing and hung out and came up with what they called the Agile Manifesto, which is a model, again, for creating software in an agile way. But, and I've been working with it forever, right? Because it's very common in my industry. What I did was I transferred it into like a magical agile manifesto. So focusing on relationships with entities more than contract negotiation, focusing on what works rather than what's right. It takes some things from chaos magic, but it also takes some things from this weird agile development methodology. So if people are curious about it, and you don't have to be a computer person to understand it, because it's just really about being in a chaotic world. And surprise, we're in a chaotic world. So if you go to my website, you drop in an email, I'll just send you the little manifesto for free. It's about like 17 pages. And it talks about a model for doing magic that's more effective and more flexible. And that informs all the rest of the things I do, the courses I offer, the consulting I offer. It's all about being more flexible and in a world that sort of requires it to get through.
Very nice. As a Gemini rising, that's like music to my ears. Like, that's my prep, you know? Like, what are you going to do in case shit hits the fan? Well, I'm going to become as adaptable as I possibly can be. That's like my sort of way of dealing with things. Cause I don't know what's going to happen. Like, and I don't know, we can talk about, we do have some ways of knowing to some extent what's going to happen. But, I always find that I get surprised regardless. So the more I can kind of prepare myself to face situations which appear novel to me, the more I can move. I like that language too that you use, because it makes me think of, I always think about power, and not the like one ring type of power, but like the power that we can wield as magically operant people. I think that for me, at least, the whole goal is interfacing with a power that allows me to move in the world. And the more I can move, the more power I have. Would you say that's...
So I would say that... So this is, there's something really smart about this, because I would say that forecasting, right, trying to tell the future, is as much about being in flow with what's already happening and what direction you need to go than it is knowing exactly what's going to happen, which is much more challenging.
Right. Knowing right? where we've been.
Yeah. And I would also say that magic is definitionally about motion. Right? It tends to make things more flexible and move more. And it's important that if you're going to be using magic in your life, you're going to be casting enchantments, you're going to be doing spells, however you approach it, that you have a life that is that can be flexible to a certain amount of change like that. Right? And one of my kind of like hot tips for wielding magic is, if there's parts of your life that are fragile, that are not really going to be okay with a lot of change, that you direct your magic at a place that is, right? So if you have some sort of stable thing that you need to be stable for now, you don't want to break it, then don't throw all your magic there. Throw your magic at other things that are much more flexible.
That's good. Yeah, I think that everyone's got that story of like, yeah, I did the headless rite and then my whole life exploded or something like that, you know? And it's like, you know, because sometimes I don't know what the restraining daimon is. Like, it might be something that I put there.
Well, I just wrote about this recently on like my Substack or something about there's some good times around the solstice to do the headless every year. I do it twice a year. And I find that it doesn't ruin my life because my life is already kind of like full of craziness, right?
Yeah.
But I have heard this from people. And sometimes what happens is that Yes, it messes stuff up, but it does it in a way that makes things stronger later. So this sort of fragility approach where certainly, and I'm stealing from Taleb on this, Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, that kind of, you know, the guy who wrote those books about those things. And he talks about fragility, you know, stuff that's really, really fragile. You have to spend a lot of energy and time keeping it from breaking. Sometimes my position is sometimes it's better to just smash that stuff.
Yeah. Kitsune.
Yeah. Just bust it down and don't worry about it anymore.
I like it too. Yeah. And so at first that's interesting too, because I do the headless write all the time now. Like, so at first it was like, this is stirring my life up in a lot of ways that I wasn't sure at the time if that was even beneficial. Right. And I can look back now and say, no, that's actually like the best thing that could have possibly happened. And now I can do it. And it's just like a good cleansing. You know what I mean?
It was
like,
great.
It
yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't like shuffle things away too much because I think probably because of what you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's actually absolutely right. And I think your mention of Kitsune is super synchronous for me because I was just reading about it. And the idea that not only does something that's been smashed and repaired become more beautiful, but potentially become stronger. And see, that happens a lot with systems that are anti-fragile, that get stronger through chaos. So for example, if you break a bone, not that this is a recommended thing, but if you were to break a bone, it tends to heal back stronger. Right? What is the process of working out, but injuring your muscles to make them grow back stronger? Human bodies are very anti-fragile this way. The chaos that we throw at them actually makes them stronger and more resilient. Right? Whereas when we baby our bodies, sometimes it does the opposite, right? And that we were evolved and designed to have periods of fast and feast or eat weirdly random things that aren't the standard American diet, obviously. Or, you know, have, you know, high intensity training, like, you know, I'm chasing down game and fighting off invaders, but then I'm also just napping a lot later. And that's much more an anti-fragile approach where you're sort of embracing the fact that things can be crazy and change happens. And you need ways of dealing with that make you stronger. And magic is a great tool for that.
Yeah, being in the flow of it and just kind of, you know, taking it as it comes. Like, okay, this feels like the time for sleep. So let's not try to run a marathon. Like, and that gets into the magical timing stuff too, right? Like, and I'm sure we've kind of been talking like that about that the whole time. But that gets us into the magical timing conversation. Like, there are better times to do things than others.
Yeah. And I'm sort of obsessed with magical timing personally. So this is exactly my sort of where my interest lies. So I started, and I really have to credit Gordon White over at Runesoup for this, right? Where I learned a little bit. I was doing magical timing in basically a paper book, like in bullet journal form, right? Pen and ink and kind of old school. And then I had taken his like early sigil class and it talked a little bit about the Hygromantea and the lunar days. And I started there. And I kept adding to it and adding to it. And eventually it got like really onerous to write it all down with a pen. And so I made it digital. And now it's a thing, like it's a whole planner that I use and that other people can use. And the whole point of it is to just identify times that are good for magic and times that are maybe less good. And what's fascinating about it to me is that obviously it's astrology adjacent. A lot of it has to do with what's going on in the space weather, but it's very different from natal astrology, even electional in some ways, because times that are great for certain activities that are calm sometimes aren't the best for enchantment, whereas times that feel really intense and crazy are great time to throw like some manifestation work in the mix. So it's an interesting approach where, oh, lots of stuff in Aries, like it's going to be really intense and it might be rough. It's also the greatest time ever to start a workout routine or do magic for courage or, right? So it's a different approach to how we time things in our lives. The timings of our enchantments can make those enchantments more powerful.
That's like a living remediation, right? Like riding the currents in the way that are going to be most beneficial for me. It's like, if it's going to happen, why not kind of harness it? I think that's a very sorcerous idea, right?
Right. Well, plus it's also again that the middle of that Venn diagram between project planning and magic, which is of such interest to me, because in addition, it's a planner where you can, like, I'm going to track the magic I'm going to do this week. I'm going to make notes on the results. I'm going to schedule things, right? It's kind of this whole little packet for actually getting things done, because it's worse to not do magic because you're waiting for the perfect time. That's the wrong approach. You should be doing lots of magic with the best timing you can and in a smart way. But, like, you know, it's almost like psilocybin, right? Like, it doesn't work, yeah. Do more. Like, if the magic isn't working, do more magic.
Yeah. It hasn't kicked in yet. I'm going to take another dose. Oh, shit. Yeah, that's good. It's also got me, so before, and it's still a work in progress for me, right? To really, like, hone in on the timing stuff. I do tend to be a more of, let's just do it all the time. And then, like, if it works out, that's great. But it's interesting because if I keep a journal and I look at the times, if I'm really kind of in the zone, I ended up doing it at the right time usually.
Yes. Yeah. When you work at the systems for a while, you get kind of, like, intuitively good at it, right? So you just start to know that it's the right time to do A and B and C. And sometimes when people start using my planner, right, it's like you can get it on my site. People will reach out and ask me, okay, I got this cool thing. How do I use this? And so I actually put together some videos because I, like, answered this question, like, several times. So I was like, I better do a thing on this. And the approach is like the way you would approach any kind of magic, regardless of the tools you're using, is to either say, over the next, you know, cycle of the moon, month, you know, in this sign, I want to focus on X and then try to identify what things I want to do toward it and when. Or the reverse, which is that you sort of look at what's going on in your life, in the space, weather, in whatever tools you do use, and then say, ooh, this is feeling like all the prosperity magic makes sense. Right. So you can either approach it with, my goal is X, let me find some good times to get that. Or the reverse, which is like, it's feeling like all of the whatever, let's lean in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, it's like a nice, like you said, it's a nice combo of those. And that gets me, like, the maximum sort of, I'm in this pocket the most there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of that same sort of paradoxical space between firm intention and lust for result. You know, like, good magic requires that you really want it, but you don't want it. And until you get the gist, until you get the knack for that, it can be hard to get results. It's the same there, where you're like impressing your will on the universe and also listening to what the universe is telling you need to do. And there's, like, a sweet spot, right, in there. And that's where magic gets super effective.
That's the place where I think, like, I almost have, like, and this might just be a personal way of looking at it, but where I think that perfect position of neutrality, you're talking about between lust for result and, you know, and the desire for it to happen. It almost is like, I see it as a place of neutrality, but it's also a place of chaos. So it's like this place of pure potential.
Yes. Yes. And this came up in a conversation with some of my magical friends, a month or so ago, where we were talking about, I'm going to get really geeky, so I apologize. We were talking about D&D a lot, right? So in the olden days, D&D as a system for gaming, right, role-playing games, had this alignment system. So you could be evil or you could be good or you could be chaotic or you could be ordered, right, whatever. And I think the modern system, the modern version of it doesn't have this anymore. But this is what I sort of came up with back when I had the time to engage in it as a hobby. And my favorite alignment was chaotic neutral.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's and that exactly describes that mindset, because you're neither focused on, you're not so much focused on, I must be one side or the other. You're saying, I'm neutral to this. I'm neutral to the outcomes, but I'm throwing my cards down. I'm throwing the dice. I'm leaning into the chaos and trying to make something good happen.
Yeah, well said. I love that alignment chart. That's like one of my favorite memes, you know, when people do it with just like all different kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So your website is called Circle Thrice. And I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, is that a Coleridge reference?
Yes, it is.
Of course, right? I have the lines directly after that tattooed on my back.
Oh, no, that's amazing.
A huge Coleridge fan.
Weave a circle around him thrice and cross his eyes with holy dread, for he on honeydew hath fed and drunk the milk of paradise. Yeah, so, absolutely.
For he on honeydew hath fed and drunk the milk of paradise is what I have.
That's beautiful. Yeah, no, that's a very cool sync. Yeah, it is a Coleridge reference coming out of my extremely useful English degree.
I've got it too.
So we can analyze literature all day long, but yeah. No, it came up because I was looking for kind of this intersection between these weird, disparate things I do. So we've got the project planning and then the magic and then the forecasting, which, yes, tarot, I've been reading since I was a teen. But moreover, it's just how to do the timing, how to look forward and try to identify the best place to position yourself, not only to you know, reach your goals, but to deal with all the chaos that's out there. And there are sort of like, these are sort of these three circles. And if you can kind of integrate them well, it's just a really powerful toolkit for being in the world.
Yeah, I like it. I'm just big on the romantic poets.
Yeah.
I was always obsessed with them in school, you know. They're just like rock stars. And Coleridge is just like, he's like living on Byron's couch.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. My particular focus was, oh, of course, William Blake.
Oh, who, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I did a ton of like Blake study, and like my primary instructor, like my mentor instructor, was like the Blake person, like had gotten their PhD on William Blake. So like all the intense Blake. And what's funny is, of course, you know, what's not to like, but at the same time, it turns out, you know, when you start looking into him, he's the same as Jung, right? They're like total magical weirdos who just like have this veneer of respectability on top, right? So Blake had talked about seeing these, meeting these entities that he was writing about. So.
Yeah, he's definitely like one of those ones where I read his poetry in school and was like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Like, what the hell is going on? And this was like it too, when I was like good little Christian boy, you know what I mean? Like I sang in the church band, you know, like, and so I'm reading Blake and I'm like, this feels naughty, but I like it.
You know? It's so naughty, but I like it. Yes. Welcome to the romantics, right? Welcome to that era of English literature, frankly. There was a lot of weirdos doing a lot of really interesting artistic stuff.
Yeah, and they're calling on the old gods, right? Like they're pining for this time that's kind of in their world is a bygone era, right? And that struck a chord with me. That really struck a chord with me. You know, when I like Ode to a Grecian Urn, Byzantium, stuff like that. Sailing to Byzantium, I think maybe is what I'm thinking of. I think, anyway.
But also just stuff like Goblin Market and all these you know, all these poems that are about these beings, these feelings, right? Because, you know, they're poetry, it's poetry, right? So it's both that are kind of underground or have been forgotten or are hiding in the cracks. And honestly, a lot of what we're all doing, a lot of modern neo-paganism and a lot of, you know, kind of like the early Gardnerian Alexandrian current really stands on the shoulders of these artists and poets who were digging into these old spaces and going, there's gold here to use for art, but also for magic. So it's a fascinating time period. Yes, you and I have a lot in common, actually.
Oh, cool.
That's interesting. So, yeah.
I think I actually was mistaken, too. I was thinking, is Sailing to Byzantium, is that Yeats?
Oh, I didn't know there'd be a quiz. Is this going to be on the final?
I'm just like now looking back and it's like, am I wrong? But like, that's interesting, too, because there's actually in that little sliver of the moderns, I find very, very analogous to some of the romantic stuff. And obviously he was a magician, too. So it makes sense.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I think all poets are, but he was.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a poet and you don't think you're doing magic, you are unfortunately incorrect.
Right.
Right. I mean, sorry, I don't make the rules. That's how that works. But no, that there's so much fascinating. There's so much fascinating stuff there that we've kind of dug out of the ground and are now experiencing in a much more vivid way. I talked before privately about some of these spirits, some of these gods who seem to be like, they are up and they're talking to people.
So that's what excites me about what's going on right now, because I was that nerd who was like crying about the silence of the oracles when I was reading this poetry. You know what I mean? Like, and just like, it was almost like I must have had a past life there or something, right? Because it's like I felt this profound connection to this world that I'd never seen or known, you know, as, you know, on a conscious level, at least. And I just was like, can that come back? Like, can we bring that back? Like, and now I look around and I'm like, that's coming back. If it was ever even gone.
Or it's back, right? Like it's back, and it's just more and more people are noticing it, right? Because, you know, I've been doing this a while, and the way that you figured this stuff out before the internet, for example, was very different and much more challenging. Now it's just innovative new Kickstarter tarot decks and people offering magical services, and it's just back. And not everybody pays attention. There's lots of folks who aren't interested, who are ignoring it. But it's less and less occulted, oddly. The occult is getting less occulted, which is a fascinating place to be.
Yeah, I actually think there's sort of an inversion going on where it's like the occult is becoming mainstream, and then things that were mainstream are now becoming occulted, you know? Like, that should be visible, but somehow it's not.
Right. Well, that's kind of ironic, because one of my early things about this sort of weird, you know, mishmash I do between project planning and magic was that project management is incredibly occulted. Like, it's this toolkit of really useful skills that the vast majority of people have no idea about.
I think I have no idea about it, honestly.
Most people don't, right? I happen to do it for a living. And I mean, I have a whole ass day job that I do this for, with like a professional cert and all of that. It's an incredibly useful skill set, because what is it for? It's to help individuals or groups of people meet goals. Now, it's typically used in a corporate setting, which means it's meant to meet corporate goals, making something to sell, getting a product out the door, making a lot of money. Well, groovy, whatever. I mean, I have a career out of it, but they could be your goals. They could be what you want to achieve. And the tools still work. You just have to grab them and jailbreak them and squeeze a bunch of magic in them. And suddenly it's this incredible, powerful system for accomplishing things. And not, again, not in a sort of like, oh, we all are on the hustle vibe, but like in a, what kind of life do I want to build?
Yeah.
What do I want to be? What do I want for myself? What are my deep values and desires? And how can I help manifest those in the world in a way that is like helpful to me, but also helpful to the world, right? Because the more people are living values and manifesting desires, kind of the better the world is going to be.
Yeah, I like that. It's interesting because, you know, I talk a lot about addiction and recovery on here, and I honestly think that like possibly 99% of the problem I had in that situation was I wanted to experience one thing, but I was taking action that was going to make me experience a different thing. And there was a disparate, there was like a disconnect between those things. And I couldn't see the disconnect. Right. So like, I'm interested in living life A, but I'm taking experience or taking action B, C, and expect, you know, and expecting it to go another way. But really I'm just like kind of going in a circle. And, you know, coming out of that and realizing that like, oh, I can just take the actions that lead to the life that I want to experience has been like kind of a total shift.
And you know, so addiction is a really extreme example of this, but I think this is in some ways really part of the human condition that we get on a track and we're just sort of like striving away, but we're striving away at the wrong thing. And I mean, you see that with folks who come out of law school and are suddenly like, wait a minute, I don't actually want to be a lawyer. Like, my goodness, if only they'd have figured that out their freshman year, things would be so much better for them, right? Before the school debt and before the time spent. And right. So I think it's really human nature to have that. And part of what project management is, I should come up with some fancier term for it because it sounds so mundane, but part of what that is it's a tool for connecting the top level strategy with the stuff you do every day. Mm-hmm. And in a corporate setting, that's the top level strategy is like what the execs did on like their golfing retreat. And then the day-to-day is what you get up when you go to work and do. But in your personal life, it's the same. The top level strategy is what you think your mission in this life might be and what you really care about and value and what your desires are. And then down at the bottom is like chop wood, carry water, right? Like I got to get up and I got shit to do, or I have a family or I have a job I have to do. And it's so hard to connect those.
Yeah.
And when I work, so I work with clients, right? I have like consulting clients through Circle Thrice that I work with on this. Some folks are incredibly strategic geniuses. They really have a true, clear vision of what they want, but it gets lost getting down to the nitty gritty. And then some people are like task rabbits. They're incredibly productive and they're always doing stuff, but they have no way of connecting back to their true deep goals. So they're churning away and like by all intents and by appearances very successfully. And yet it feels empty because they're not connecting it back to kind of their personal strategy.
Yeah, I can relate to both of those at times. I think sometimes I think about, especially the kind of magic that I think resonates with me the most, you know, I think about it like, and what you were just describing, it brought this to mind, but I think about it like, how can I become possessed by my highest self? Like, cause I'm going to like, there's going to be, cause I kind of think that we're always like possessed a little bit, right? Like there's always spirits coming in and out. These ideas that I have, these thoughts that I have, these emotions I'm experiencing, it's all a spirit environment, right? But the question is it serving me or is it serving counter to what I'm interested in experiencing? The more I can get in line, I can get all of that kind of flowing in one direction. It's like it's still being possessed, but it's like being possessed by like the oversoul, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And in your higher self, your HGA, your guiding spirit, however you frame it, depending on kind of your personal approach to it. That's exactly right. Because that's the you that knows more than the you that's busy here day to day. And the more you can tap into that, the better off you'll be, like the better able you'll be to be in the world. And it doesn't mean that the world's going to world no matter what the rest of us do, right? But it allows us to cope with things a lot better. And your point about doing something, wanting result A, but then all your tasks are not aligned to result A is really, really common. I think the other thing that happens a lot is that I think we create these little boxes where things go. So we have the box that's like, you know, the stuff we have to do. And then there's this box of like stuff we want to do, like our dreams that we often deprioritize. And then we have the magic box, which lives way over here, right? Mm-hmm. And only happens at certain times and places and doesn't. And the more we break down those boxes and integrate all the stuff we're interested in, the better. You get more of everything done and you get more magic involved, which makes all the rest of it better. The mundane stuff too, because, you know, nobody gets to not do the day to day.
This is really resonating with me right now, because the experience I've been having is like those boxes. So like I said, I was on the road for a year and I wasn't doing this podcast. This podcast is like, it's like what, like when I'm doing this, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing this. You know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things that like I want to do, spirits want me to do it. And it's just in line with what I want. And so I wasn't doing that. And like, you know, there's like a deep feeling of emptiness when I'm not in line with that. So I got home and I had been doing a bunch of magic on the road, but still not as much as I'd have liked to do, you know? And then it's like a kind of a different ecosystem, right? I was dealing with road spirits, which is fun. But it's a very chaotic sort of group. And I got home and it was like all this magic that I had done did like a whoosh, and like there was something uncorked and it all started to flow. And then I started doing this. I got back in the gym. I started moving my body, and like all of that fed into this like momentum. And like what you're describing is, I feel like what I'm going through. And so I think I'm definitely going to, I need to sign up, because it's like something I want to keep going.
Well, and what strikes me as really interesting is, you know, we talked about the places that you can handle chaos and the places that you can't, right? It's if you're driving long haul trucking, there's only a certain amount of chaos you want there.
Yeah.
And when you're and when that's not your deep desire, but that's just what you're doing because we all have shit we need to do, right? What you're finding is that all of this enchantment you're doing, it does sort of build up. It has nowhere yet to land. And then when you pause, suddenly it starts landing. You have somewhere where it can land. And that doesn't mean, and I don't want to imply that all magic is chaotic. Or if it was, then so much of the magic of the world wouldn't be about like good health, prosperity. I mean, those things are stabilizing. And it's good. So it's not like magic is just always chaos. But what happens is the way those stabilizing magics work in your life is by removing and tossing out the things that don't support that. Right? So, and that can sometimes seem a little bit shocking or changing, right? It's like people often do, I love this, a road opening. A real common kind of magic people do. I've done it myself. You do road opening, you do unblocking. Think about the action of that. What roads are you opening? What blocks are you ripping out of your path and moving? And what are the effects of that, right? There's always some interesting effects. You were doing a ton of magic and yet you were in this routine that didn't have a lot of places for it to manifest. And so again, once you paused, now it all comes pouring out.
That's a, yeah, perfect. Great way to say it. That's definitely the experience. That's interesting. I'm going to definitely be thinking with that because, yeah, it's like you said, giving it a place to work so that it can keep flowing. It's interesting too, the way that I've sort of looked at it, it's been good. It's been constructive. Is like Odin goes out on the road to gather wisdom, but he's got to bring it back. And then Freya is the one that integrates what's been learned on the road. And so I've been kind of like leaning into a Freya thing while I'm home.
Well, and if you think about it mythologically, Odin isn't isolated on the road. He has his ravens bringing him information and communicating information back. And if I'm recalling correctly, they're named Hugin and Munin.
Hugin and Munin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Thought and memory.
Yeah. And those are the things he uses to continue to, you know, kind of like be in his role while he's out in the world. Right. Yeah. He's not necessarily isolating himself. He always has a way of connecting. This reminds me of a fascinating conversation I had with my friend and marketing guru, Brian Wilkins, right? Who's, you might've heard him.
Yeah. He's been on here.
Yeah. There you go. I was on him and Zamboni's the other day. Everyone I know knows everyone else I know. Yeah. That's the way we roll. He and I had this great conversation where we were talking about, basically kingship and queenship. Now, I want to make sure that if we're going to talk about that, we need to talk about it in a not a gross, gender restrictive kind of way.
It's easy to fall into that spot.
We don't want to do that. We want to open those concepts up to be concepts that every single person can manifest in their lives, regardless of parts or proclivities or changes, right? That none of that matters to the spirits. But what does matter is that, and this is coming from Brian. So Brian, full credit to you. Kingship is about currency, about literally the current of flow. And queenship is about connection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when you are doing good magic, you are embodying both currency and connection in your life.
That's right? Cool, because the image I got for this, that dichotomy, that Odin and Freya thing, was like Odin comes back. It's almost like a joke. It's almost phrased like a joke, right? Odin comes back home after discovering the runes and he says, "Hey, Freya, look what I discovered." And she laughs and says, "Oh, yeah? Watch what happens when you stick them together." And that's the bind rune, right? Like, and there's also the implication there, like, yeah, you think you discovered that.
It's also the alphabet, right? I mean, it's literally the way we connect.
Yeah, that connection.
Yeah. And by manifesting the currency and the connection in you, that's what sovereignty is, right? In a totally non-gender specific way, right? That's just how we are sovereign in the world, is by being in flow and then connecting correctly with the spirits, with each other, with, you know, the path, with our higher self.
I like it a lot. That's good. And so, yeah, so using my example again, yeah, I was a little bit out of balance, right? Because if I was experiencing a ton of, and it's okay, it's not like something I'm like, ah, shucks, you know, but like if I was experiencing a lot of current and currency, but I wasn't experiencing connection, those things have to level out in order for it to be a full
right package. Because your podcast is connection, right? We're connecting. Hopefully people who listen will connect, right? It's a mechanism for that. You couldn't find a way to embody that during your time of hyper movement. And that's not the end of the world by any means. We all have, you know, it's, you know, a time to be born and a time to die and a time to plant and a time to raise, a time to sow and a time to reap. It's old school stuff, right? That we go through different cycles. There's different times that are appropriate for doing things, but you were definitely feeling the lack of connection.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So for example, the way that I would approach this question for you is to think about what sort of things you value. Like, you clearly value communication and connection because you do this podcast and it means a lot to you. And how do you manifest that value in your life, regardless of the circumstances that you're in? Because sometimes you got to be on the road, making bank, saving money, right? Like the way that life is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a good exercise. And something too that, yeah, that's actually one of the things that's come out of this as well, right? Like, what am I interested in experiencing? And then how do I get there?
My sister for many years was an actual therapist, right? Like a licensed therapist. And she would do, you know, group talk therapy with people. And one of her favorite exercises, which I love, and I'm so just totally stealing, it was called the depression cake, right? So she was working with folks who were struggling, who were in tough spots. They're not obviously feeling great. And one of the problems with the way that our society deals with that sort of situation is that everyone wants to tell you to, like, eat yogurt or, you know, go out for a run or something. Like, yeah, everyone has like this very like, oh, we'll do more things. Well, yeah, great. Nobody feels like doing anything, right? But her thing was different. She would ask people to identify the ingredients that would go into baking their own personal depression cake. So, like, instead of being about all the things you need to add to your life to somehow make yourself feel better, she was saying, what makes you feel bad? And then people could come to that with, wow, 3 days of Coca-Cola and Snickers bars, and I know that I am not going to be in a good place.
That's a really good point.
Or, you know, like, I haven't been sleeping, and when I don't sleep, it's just bad for me. Or that's a person in my life who's toxic, and so when I deal with them, I feel rotten. And when people can identify those things, so then her response is not somehow this is a magical cure, but let's not add those ingredients as much. Let's try to point away from those things. So it's a reductive kind of letting go of the things that don't serve you, the directions you don't need to move, all those many tasks that you somehow get saddled with that aren't great and don't get you to the results you want, and get rid of those.
Yeah, that's good. Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think that that shedding is so much, to me at least, in my experience, is so much more beneficial than adding. And, you know, sometimes it's time to add. That's fine. But, like, again, I'll go to the recovery stuff. Like, one of the mantras that I've picked up is uncover, discover, and discard. You know? And I don't have to, but it's a very liberating process, in my opinion, because it's like, it can seem like adding all that stuff, it's like adding more weight.
Well, you have to get rid of something else, right? This is pure project planning. If I tell my team that they need to do 10 things, if I'm going to add more things, then the right response is, hey, some of this is not going to happen now. There's only so much to do. Like, that's a very basic kind of model for deciding the scope of things. There's only so much time, so much energy, so much money, right? Yeah. We live in a real world with real constraints on us. We're in a meat suit. Someday we will die, right? I mean, those are real things that we have to contend with. And I think that understanding what you don't want is as important as what you do. I actually blogged about this recently, about like because one of my friends asked me this, what do you think is more important, knowing what you want or knowing what you don't want? And that was such a good question. I think knowing what you don't want is almost more important than knowing what you want, because sometimes you'll find yourself in a situation, and I have been in this situation where you're like, I don't know what I want. None of this is what I want. I don't know what I want, but I sure know that what I've got right now isn't it. And if you're only approaching things from the standpoint of what do I want, what do I want to achieve and get to and win and do, and you're not evaluating like what's not working for me, what isn't in align with my values, right? What doesn't align there? What am I doing that's making a rotten cake in my life, and what do I need to offload? And magic is about that too, right? A lot of magic is manifestation. I need cash to pay the rent, and I want this, and I deserve love, and I want, and gimme, gimme, gimme. But exorcism and banishing is critical, a magical activity, right? To let go of things that don't serve you, to cut cords that aren't helping you, to eliminate the things that are not getting you where you want to go.
Which is why that headless right sometimes looks like it's like, you know, I cut my arm off, but it's like, oh yeah, I get it after a while.
To bring it
back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. It makes me think of writing. We can bring it back to writing too. You know, literature, like the best advice I can get, and I hate it, I don't like it, about a story I'm writing or even a poem, God forbid anyone edits my poem, but is, hey, this part can get cut. Get it lean. This part doesn't need to be there. And it's like, that's excruciating process, but it is the most important thing to me in terms of like how to become better at writing. It also made me think when you were describing that is, it's like a sculpture, right? Like finding what you want and then removing the parts that aren't that.
That aren't the angel.
Yeah.
Right? Like I look at the stone and I'm like, I'm just going to remove everything that's not the thing I want. Yeah, it's a very powerful exercise. And it's powerful. One of the things that's fascinating about it is it has such utility for all aspects of our lives. So it can, emotionally, it's really impactful, and spiritually and magically, but it's also just physically. Right. So, for example, I recently came into needing to deal with the estate of my parents. Right. This is an activity that many people go through at some point. And so basically there was just this massive stuff that I'm supposed to be dealing with. Right. And it's an incredibly challenging process to deal with this stuff. And it's just stuff, right? But it's not, right? Because it comes with this weight and this history and this memory. And so it ends up being a hugely kind of emotional, challenging grieving process to go through and get rid of this stuff. At the same time, I know it's just stuff. Look, I have an office full of stuff. Look at all my books, right? I collect stuff like anyone, but it's not like stuff is bad, but stuff can come with these burdens on you. Right. And that it could be physical stuff, but it can also be relationship stuff or emotional stuff or whatever it is. Right. And you have to offload the stuff. You have to let go of things.
And that can be difficult in relationships too, right? Like drawing those boundaries, because I, for the longest time, was not great at that. I'm still working on it, but it's interesting because it's one of those things where, once I have the experience, I understand that, like, okay, well, it might feel like it sucks, but it actually, like, every time I do it, it makes the container stronger. The container that is me, right? And, you know, that doesn't mean, like, go out and cut everyone off. But, like, if it needs to happen, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know it's a boundary exercise, right? And this is a very Saturnian approach to things. I mean, if you come out of kind of like a classical Hellenistic astrology view, you know, you've got the benefics and the malefics, and Mars and Saturn aren't great, and they can wreak havoc and cause problems, but they also come with strengths, even though they're not benefic, right? They have strengths, because so Mars is literally has a strength, is strength and courage and fortitude. And one of Saturn's big strengths is about boundaries. Right. That's huge. And for me, that's been a really powerful sort of exercise to the more I do with magical timing and astrology, the more I involve myself with those spirits, right? Who are gods and goddesses, classically named, but also larger spirits and forces that are at work for all of us, right? Because we all have those things in our charts. And so boundaries come out of a very Saturnian kind of place. What's in, what's out, what's cut, what's not happening, what's happening, right? Who you want to deal with and who you don't.
And who I want to be and who I don't.
That's right. The boundary of yourself. Yeah. 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 One of the magical activities I did in, I just finished a class on setting goals, right? So again, mundane seeming, but actually magic under the covers. So it's called a magic goals class. And one of the things that came up in the course was about figuring out who the you is who can reach your goal.
I like that.
So there's something you want, a future for your household, something you want to change, whatever it is, that becomes a goal. Who's the you who actually does that? Right? Who gets there? That's the you that you need to embody. That's the boundary you begin to set.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, and I don't know if it's just me, but this conversation makes me think of Ekate too. And kind of the experience that I've been having with her, like that's been a very big, this is like something that she's taught me, is like having the strength and courage to do that. I think it's there's an epithet of hers that's, you know, Borboro Porba, I might be mispronouncing it, but the eater of filth.
Yeah.
That's a vibe there for me right now.
Ekate comes off to me as very Saturnian. And in fact, I often engage with Saturn as a planetary spirit as a feminine figure. It's canon to some of the old sources, and it makes for a really nice parallel where you have Jupiter, you know, the sun and the moon, and then you have Jupiter and Venus, and you have Mars and Saturn. And I think of Saturn as being kind of like, she's your crotchety old grandma.
Yeah,
who's going to tell
the
crumb, what, not you shit. Yeah. And Ekate is a very Saturnian vibe, interestingly, right? She's got that same sort of, she's around like thresholds and liminal spaces and boundaries and crossroads. And that's entirely her vibe. Also, she's associated with, you know, unquiet dead and eater of filth and just the things that are unpleasant, the dross, the detritus, the stuff we have to process. It's kind of a composting.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of model, right? I mean, at the time when Ekate was worshipped, one of the things that happened during kind of her monthly, during the Deipnon, which was like her monthly new moon, ritual that people would do to honor her, was you'd take the garbage to her, which sounds like, really? But back then, garbage was very different than we think of today. It didn't last, you know, 10,000 years. It was all biodegradable. And
but
so
it wasn't like, bring me your microplastics. It was
right. It was much more like, bring me the things you can't use and I'll turn them into what is rich soil.
Oh, that's good. That's good magic.
Yeah. Yeah. The composting activity. It's a very powerful place to position yourself around getting rid of the things you don't need, because something can be toxic for you and medicine for someone else. It can be something you don't need, but that somebody else desperately needs. Like those things that you let go of go back into the ground and compost.
Yeah. I think I got this from Gordon White. I'm pretty sure I got this from Gordon White, where like when I do, like it's a helpful practice for me that when I am banishing things, I am like allowing them to go back into the earth and become either something different or whatever it is, but like they to be composted, to return back to the earth and to make that like a conscious part of that process. I do it at the end of the day with the day too.
Just letting go of it, letting it compost. Yeah, no, yeah. It's hugely powerful. And I know Gordon has talked about it. We should all just say hello to Gordon because
yeah,
he's awesome. But yeah, no, it's powerful magic. So here, an interesting example of this from my personal life is that in the height of COVID frenzy, we decided that we were going to move to a new house, right? Which it was a very weird thing because there were some weird sinks and I came home and I'm like, if we don't move now, we're not going to move. And it turned out that would have been absolutely true. So we ended up moving during the midst of COVID. And one of the things in our house that we have is we have a septic tank. I've never owned one of these creatures before. We're like the only house left in the neighborhood that has one of these. Magically, having this is fascinating.
Oh, that's, I got ideas already just when you mentioned that.
Yeah, it's incredibly potent and useful for protection kinds of magic, for that kind of like, let the negative things reflect away from me kind of thing. I know exactly where they go. But also, this is the household's waste, and it is not getting shipped away to some factory somewhere. It's literally going into the ground and being eaten by the power of this like egregore under the ground and then filtering into magically, it's incredibly potent. And it's a lot closer than most people get to their waste now in the modern world. Most of us don't deal with waste. We don't have dead bodies we're really dealing with. We don't have garbage that we have to tie. It all goes away, right? It just gets taken away and you don't have to deal with it. It just somehow magically is okay. It's really not, right? We know it's not.
Yeah.
But this is a much more intensive process. And I've actually sort of formed a relationship with Venus Cloacina, Venus of the sewers from ancient Rome, because she helps, you know, ensure the health of this system that we have.
I like Venus of the sewers. That's cool. And it's also like, the first thing I thought was like, you better not fuck around or your name's going to my septic tank.
You said it. I didn't. But yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to make you answer that. You know, I can't really walk through a graveyard without being like, oh, that's a good hole. Like,
I have to say though, that, septic tank magic might be the weirdest podcast topic ever.
Oh, I think it's going to definitely have to go in the title.
Yeah, we discussed septic tank magic. And
no, that's like, yeah, that's really good. And you know what? I have never thought about that phrase. And so today, I got to think of a phrase I've never thought about before. To me, that's a win, you know?
There's always an interesting way to integrate magic, right? It's limited by our creativity. And this is what I was meaning about, like, not compartmentalizing. The magic only lives over here. No, it's everywhere. It's part of your household, part of your actions.
Yeah, I want my whole life to be magic. And really it is. It's just a matter of, like you're talking about, like, if I make the box, I'm going to experience it that way. It's really just like the door is not locked. It's open. I just can step into it.
Right. And that doesn't mean there's not wrong ways to do stuff, right? Like, that doesn't mean that anything goes anytime, but it's really nice to allow yourself to find room for the enchanted in your day-to-day life.
And I'm a fuck around, find out kind of guy. Did I just drop out there?
No, you're good.
Okay. My monitor got weird. Yeah, I'm definitely a fuck around, find out kind of guy. Where, like, you know, obviously I'm not going to like just do things for the sake of them, but it's like, it's kind of better to ask forgiveness and permission, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that with magic, the most potent sort of position that I've taken that works really well for me, that feels really potent, is that there's never one right way to do stuff. There's never one right way, but there are most certainly wrong ways.
Yeah, that's good.
And so if you can avoid, again, it's a matter of avoidance. If you can avoid the wrong ways, you have a lot of flexibility around what you can do, what you should be doing with magic. And wrong just means thoughtlessly, meaninglessly, you know, not in line with what, you know, you're sensing from your environment, from your spirits, carelessly, right? It's like barbarous names. You do PGM, I do PGM stuff. You know, you're doing the stuff and there's this list of like strings of vowels and you're like, oh, I don't know how this is pronounced. Guess what? The people who wrote the PGM probably didn't either.
Right.
And the trick is that you do it, like that you make the effort to know what the vowels are, like that you actually know what the letters are supposed to sound like, and that then you do it consciously, willfully, forcefully, and like with sincerity.
I think the best.
And then they will be correct.
Yeah, exactly. That just happened again. Hold on. Hold on. I'm having technical difficulties. Check, check. Okay.
I'm back. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, I think to me, the best advice I can give anyone in regards to what you're talking about just now is act like you belong here, you know, with, and that's kind of how I approach that stuff. And there's something about those magical names where like, am I pronouncing them right? I don't know. But the spell will teach me how to do it, especially if I do it a bunch. And when I'm really getting going, like the wind will pick up, like you can feel actual tangible feedback.
The hair on the back of your neck stands up. Yeah. And you get goosebumps and you feel it and then you know it's correct. And if somebody else is having that same feeling and they're pronouncing it differently, it's also correct. There's not one right way. There's just wrong ways, right? So that's the best approach to magic, I think. It's been really beneficial to me. Instead of worrying so much, which I did when I was young, right? Like you start out, you're like, am I doing this wrong? Well, now you are, unconfident girl. You need to like, you know, step up and do it correctly. And then you're doing it correctly.
I think that really lines up nicely too with the idea of like, find out what you don't want. Like finding out what doesn't work is such valuable information that like, it's worth giving it a shot. If I find out that what I did was wrong, great. What valuable information.
Yeah. Yes, truly. And and the other thing is that I'm almost compulsively pragmatic, almost to an unfun degree, in that, you know, I love learning new magical systems. I've spent my life picking up new magic tools, right? Like, oh, I'm going to learn about this now. Oh, I'm going to start to create this planner. I want to do this other thing. I love it. But if you're trying to make your household more prosperous and sustainable in chaotic times, which means you really need to lay on some money magic and some job magic and some peaceful magic, whatever it is, if that's your goal, stick to what you know works.
Yeah.
Because if you start your goal like, okay, my goal is to have a less awful job that gets our family secure and prosperous, that's a great goal, right? There's nothing wrong with that goal. If step one in that goal is, I think I need to learn astrology, that's not the right, don't do that. Instead, focus on what you do know how to do or the tools you can pick up quickly that are very flexible, like sigils, for example, hyper flexible, very easy, fuck around and find out, very agile. Do those. And yes, you can have a goal to learn new systems. I have that goal basically ongoing. But if I'm doing something else, right, a major healing work, prosperity work, you know, trying to identify like a desire or manifest something, I'm going to go with the stuff I know works for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Cause I'm one of those people that I think I treated magic for a long time, like Pokemon, you know, like got to catch them all. Like
collect all the cards. Yeah.
Got to collect all the cards, got to make friends with all the spirits, got to know everything. And it's like, jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing, where it's like, now I'm very much drilled down on like a couple things and it's never been better. You know, like it's especially funny when like, for me, it's like, oh, you actually had all the tools that you needed in the very beginning and then went on this 3-year search only to come back around and be like, oh, I had it already.
This is the very much over the rainbow kind of lesson, right? It was all at home anyway, right? It was all kind of where you started. But the journey is important too, because you do grow and experience, and you do learn things that are valuable.
Oh, and so, I wouldn't have ever trusted those things if I hadn't have gone out and checked it out.
Figured out the other things. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and learning for learning's sake isn't bad. It's great. I had done that Gordon's Grimoire course, right? Super fascinating. Hygromante has become a key part of the magical timing I use. I also have like a stack, like right there, of Skinner books, the big yellow ones, with all kinds of cool, fascinating information that I don't actually do a lot of active magic with, right? I'm just not in a place where I need to be like doing a bunch of Goetia. It's fine. Right. I can now. It's cool. I have the resources should I need them. It's just not kind of for me the approach I'm at. And that can change over time too.
Yeah, for sure. It evolves.
One of the things I do with, so when I have clients who are newer to magic, one of the things I talk about is you need like four tools in your toolkit. You need some sort of altered consciousness technique, meditation, journeying, drumming, whatever it is for you. You need like a spirit engagement. Start with the ancestors, right? They're super simple and you all have them, right?
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead. You're good.
Sorry. And you need some kind of forecasting, right? A divinatory tool of whatever kind. And then you need an odds manipulation tool, some kind of spellcraft, which for people who are very, very new, I'm always like, let's do the sigils. Sigils are awesome. They're cheap. They're easy, right? But those are four components you need. And you can have more than one variety of those at your disposal, but you can really just start with four.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, and when I was interrupting you, I was just going to say about the ancestors is that they're easily understood because they're human, you know, like it's a nice way to start because it's like, okay, I can relate to them. Now it's also fun to go in other directions too. And sometimes they're not human, honestly.
Yeah. If someone were starting totally from scratch, I'd be like, all right, we're going to do some sigils. You're going to grab a pendulum or a deck of cards, not even tarot. You're going to talk to your non-cranky grandma, you know, pick an ancestor who wasn't an asshole and focus there. Right. And then you're going to learn to just kind of sit and chill your brain out for a little bit. Like it can be really simple. And that's all you need to put together a really valuable magical practice.
That's nice. Yeah, I like that. So since you've mentioned divination and tarot specifically, I know we haven't talked a lot about that. Do you want to take a second and kind of explain where that fits in? I mean, obviously you kind of just did, right? If you want to elaborate on that a little bit. Because I'll give an example from my own life, you know. Sometimes I can get so hyperfixated on the cards that I actually confuse myself. How can I integrate it into the approach you're talking about to really support the process?
Right. That's such a good question. So if you have a forecasting tool of whatever kind, you can, the idea is that you can gain access to information that maybe you couldn't see otherwise, right? That's what divination really is. And that's great, but it makes sense to ask yourself what the return on investment is, the ROI on that. Like, what questions are the most valuable to ask? And what questions are less useful or take up too much time or you get hyperfixated on? So it's really good to sort of have a thoughtful approach to it. One of my approaches has to do with black swans and being the farmer and not the turkey. So if you're not familiar with this metaphor, again, it comes out of the black swan, Taleb's black swan book. A black swan is some gigantically outsized event that hits and totally throws people for a loop and nobody could have predicted. And the ultimate example that always gets used is 9/11. Like before 9/11, everyone was like, la, la, la. And then that happened. And everyone was like, holy cow, we didn't see that coming, right?
Yeah, COVID is another one.
COVID's another one. Absolutely. Totally outsized, just way over like craziness. And nobody predicted it. Except for the people who predicted it.
Right.
Right. So there's this famous story about this guy, and I'm not going to remember his name offhand, which is embarrassing. He was a security expert in one of the Twin Towers, and he just had a lot of domain specific knowledge. And he was extremely concerned that there would be a terrorist attack. And he started escalating this to his bosses and to the other people. And he's like, I think that there's going to be something. And he knew that because he had a lot of experience in the industry. He knew people in the industry. He'd seen other things happen. He had the specific knowledge set that let him forecast something that nobody said could be forecasted. And the turkey and the farmer metaphor comes from the idea that there's a turkey and a farmer, and they're hanging out on the farm. And every day the turkey gets fed, loves the farmer, life is good. For the turkey, Thanksgiving is a black swan. Like, it's an event that could not be predicted. But you know what? It's not that for the farmer. Right? So if you know that something is coming, then it's not a black swan for you. Even if it's destructive and awful, it doesn't mean it's not great. It's not bad. It's still a big thing that has happened to you. It doesn't make it okay. But if you're the farmer, you know it's coming. So this guy knew that it was coming. And in fact, he died helping save people because he went back up into the towers to try to help save people. And he died because he knew it was coming. So it's the same kind of model. So when you ask questions of whatever tools you have, the tarot, the runes, whatever, think about that. What are the questions that make you better informed, that give you perspective? And then I never like to ask, should I do X? Because it's massively disempowering. Plus, I don't know. I don't try. Like, I have a tarot deck that I've used for a couple decades now, the same deck. That's a friend of mine. But like, I don't know what your cards are to you. Like, maybe they'll lie. Maybe they think I should do something I don't want to do. So instead of saying, should I do X? The better thing to say is, what's the result if I do X? Or what should I do that gives me the result I want? Which is a nice turning it on its head.
Yeah. So action oriented too, right? Is what I'm getting from what you're saying. Like, what can I do?
What happens if I do this, or what do I do to make this happen, are some of the most powerful questions. And so I rarely do readings for magical workings because I do a lot of magical workings. So I know, right. I know people who are very serious about that. They're like, I always do a reading to see if the working is beneficial. I'm all like, yeah, let's throw some shit out there and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm like you.
Other people might not be like that. I understand. But instead of saying, should I do X, always just say, what's the result, or what's the best thing to do to get to the thing I want? I have a couple readings that I used to just do them, like, you know, on my site for sale readings. And they were just they're not like three card spreads. They're very like detailed and onerous, and they got too much. And I kept upping the price, and people kept buying them. And I was just like, no, just stop. I can't. So now I do them in concert with consultation. So the idea is, yeah, I'll throw cards for you, but like, that's not the important part. The important part is the hour we then spend making a plan around what the card said, right? Mm-hmm. And I have one reading that I used to do called The Black Swan, because, like, again, that book was very meaningful to me, which is about, in the domains of your life, where are you the turkey? Where is there a risk that you can't see? And then what can you find out about that risk? How do you mitigate or avoid, or, right? Which is risk mitigation is a whole kind of area of project management that I have some experience with. And I have a book on my site on it. Like, if shit's crazy and you don't know what to do, risk management is what you do, right?
Very nice. That's great. Thank you so much for that. That's really helpful. And I hope that, you know, I think that there's a lot of people listening that will find that helpful too. So I think we covered everything. Is there anything else that you want to mention that we didn't hit?
Well, no, I really appreciate being on the podcast. It's incredible. If anyone's curious about this new course that I've got going on, feel free to go to my site and take a look, right, and see if it might be right for you. But otherwise, I love to come on podcasts. I love to chat.
I love it. This is a great conversation too, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I'll talk to you again soon. Probably personally at this point, right? Like we'll hang out. Be great.
Sounds good. Well, you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks. You too.
Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.